Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, February 26th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Mendocino search and rescue deployed weeks after man's disappearance. Immigration resources highlighted in Mendocino County. And Huffman Town Hall probes, quote, dire threats to our democracy. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The search continues for 84-year-old David Taylor of Will Gulch, who has been missing for 3 weeks. However, because Taylor, a longtime resident of the remote northern Mendocino community, lives alone, his neighbors did not realize he was missing until late last week. At that point, they contacted the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office. The Southern Humboldt Technical Rescue Team and other volunteers have been leading the grassroots search efforts. However, as of today, the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office search and rescue team has been deployed, increasing law enforcement presence near the Humboldt-Mendocino County line south of Shelter Cove.
For him to not be around for a few days and nobody to see him, that was perfectly normal for him.
That was Mendocino County Sheriff Matthew Kendall.
We've got one of our search and rescue coordinators and I think 8 volunteers today. We're doing, you know, looking for any bail-offs, like drove off the road type thing. We're searching, you know, all areas, basically between Usaw all the way north into Humboldt. It's kind of an every place search right now. We just don't have a starting point with the exception of possibly the store in Shelter Cove.
Authorities believe Taylor was traveling in a gold or silver 1990s-era Nissan Pathfinder. The vehicle was reportedly last seen at the Shelter Cove General Store on February 6th at around 3 p.m. Surveillance footage shows the vehicle arriving in the parking lot, but no one exits before it pulls away, making it difficult to confirm if Taylor was the driver.
And we can't say 100% that was his vehicle. I'm 90% that's his vehicle, because it's a strange vehicle. It's the correct color. It's a 2-door. We just don't have a license plate on it, and we don't know that was him driving it.
At this time, law enforcement has not received any significant leads. Sheriff Kendall urges residents in the rural communities of Whitethorn, Whale Gulch, and Shelter Cove to keep an eye out for the vehicle and report any information to authorities.
What we need to do is we need to find that vehicle so that we can have a starting point. And if anybody knows where he purchased the vehicle or where he got the vehicle, because the vehicle is not in his name. We did a reverse look through DMV, and we just can't, it's not registered to him, not that Pathfinder. So if anybody knows where he got the vehicle, that would be super helpful. I would imagine it was a local that sold it to him. But nobody's been able to help us on that one, because if we can get the license plate number, then we can feed it into databases across the state. And if he did leave the area, maybe somebody could tell us.
David Taylor is an 84-year-old white male standing between 6'5 and 6'6 tall, weighing approximately 185 pounds, with white hair, a bushy beard, and brown eyes. Witnesses report that he was last seen wearing multiple layers, including jackets featuring a dark brown and maroon plaid pattern, a dark-colored beanie, blue jeans, brown boots, and reading glasses. He is also linked to a silver or tan 1990s-era 2-door Nissan Pathfinder. Law enforcement continues to emphasize that no tip is too small, urging anyone with information about Taylor's whereabouts or vehicle he was last seen in to contact the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office. That number is 707-463-4086. You can see a photo of the missing man at kmud.org. The National Weather Service in Eureka has issued a beach hazard statement along the entire north coast due to an elevated threat of deadly sneaker waves. Yesterday, a hazardous seas warning was in effect. And while the ocean may appear calmer than before, meteorologists warn that conditions remain dangerous. With Thursday's sunshine expected to bring beachgoers, officials urge caution.
Hi, yeah, it's another stellar day out there. A lot of sunshine, not a whole lot of strong winds. And my name is Doug Boucher. I'm a meteorologist here with the National Weather Service. And as I had mentioned, we're looking at another nice day tomorrow with lots of sunshine and not really very strong winds. But there is a hidden insidious threat that is still lurking out there, and that's a long period westerly swell from a storm system emanating from a storm system in the western Pacific, and that'll bring a threat for sneaker waves here to basically the entire coast from the Del Norte County coast all the way down into Mendocino County, and even probably into the San Francisco Bay Area as well. And so we're looking at waves building, westerly swell building up to about, 8 to 10 feet at 16, 17 seconds through the day. And that'll, that usually creates what we call set behavior. And so large unexpected waves can suddenly rise up in what would look like a very safe and serene situation there out on the beaches. And that's what gets people in trouble.
Sneaker waves can appear suddenly, surging far up the shore and sweeping unsuspecting individuals into the water. Here on the North Coast, it is not uncommon for these powerful waves to hurl large logs onto the shore, which can be deadly.
Bad things happen. So yeah, we're just, we have a beach hazard statement in effect for tomorrow from Thursday morning all the way through the evening, and to just give folks a heads up that there is that threat there for what we typically just call sneaker waves, but it's more like set behavior. So it's essentially, a period where there's a whole lot of wave activity, i.e. breaking waves, and then there's a period where there's a sudden surge of water, i.e. Larger waves that could sweep you off rocks and jetties and get you into trouble out there.
According to the National Park Service, an average of 4 people die each year on Northern California beaches due to sneaker waves. Beach visitors are advised to never turn their backs to the ocean, to stay far away from the water's edge, and avoid standing on rocks or jetties.
Enjoy our nice weather, albeit there are some insidious things out there that could still get you, i.e. the sneaker waves, mostly tomorrow. And then we have a storm system, or what should I say, a series of storm systems coming in this weekend. More rain and mountain snow over the weekend.
For more information about the beach hazard statement or to get an up-to-the-minute weather update, you can visit weather.gov/EKA. A town hall held by North Coast Congressman Jared Huffman dealt with the fear and alarm over a new era of presidential leadership. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
The consequences of Donald Trump's return to the White House, this time accompanied by Elon Musk, are triggering widespread fear, and Congressman Jared Huffman has urged people to, quote, hang in there and stay strong. During a February 24th phone-in town hall meeting, Huffman acknowledged that, quote, people are worried and alarmed about many of the developments that we've seen in the first month of the second Trump presidency, and, quote, I want everyone to know something. I am fully engaged, this is not business as usual, and I do consider many of these events to be dire threats to our democracy, the rule of law, and core American values. Huffman's list of examples included the firing of 18 inspector generals, the, quote, illegal freezing of federal funding, quote, thoughtless and cruel layoffs, and Musk and his, quote, private sector tech bros doing things that no outside party should be allowed to do, including having full access to a lot of our really sensitive taxpayer data. The seriousness of the situation was discussed in this exchange between a caller and Huffman.
I'm just really, I have a lot of neighbors concerned from what's occurring. And we just seem very distraught that there's nothing that can be done to stop this insanity. And, you know, in regards to the IRS, the, you know, the reduction in forces in the Forest Service and their firefighting capabilities. We're up here in the Mendocino National Forest area, and it just doesn't seem like there's anything to slow this juggernaut of insanity down. I have a neighbor who's just ultimately really depressed. He actually said it the other day, and I'm really concerned with him about his health. Is there anything that can stop this from proceeding at the rate that they're doing? It doesn't seem like there's anything that the Democrats can actually stop this, it seems like to me.
Yeah. Thank you for your question, Scott. And look, I'm concerned too. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I'm not going to try to gloss over with happy talk what's actually going on. There is reason for dire concern about our democracy, about these federal services and programs that we count on for our safety, for our environment, for so many things, for our health care. But we're not powerless. And I want to emphasize that. So giving up is not an option. We're not going to just roll over and allow all of these destructive things to take place.
A call-in question about what will happen when legal challenges to Trump's executive orders and directives reach the Supreme Court prompted Huffman to describe some of them as blatantly illegal and likely to be struck down, but others may not be.
I think we will get some wins even with this Supreme Court. What I don't know is, you know, which gifts they will give him on some of these other cases, the purging of the federal workforce or any number of other, the impoundment issue, which if you're following that, this is the president basically refusing to spend money that has been enacted by Congress because he doesn't like those laws. He doesn't like the programs. Now, that's illegal. Under our Constitution, we've even got a statute called the Impoundment Control Act of 1974 that says that definitely is illegal. You can't do that. But he appears willing to do it anyway. And what we don't know is, will he defy a court order or will he simply challenge impoundment and then live with an adverse court decision? We're going to find out a lot of interesting things in the weeks and months ahead, and some of it could present a constitutional crisis. So, again, I don't want to be too alarmist, but we've never seen anything like this.
The federal budget needs to be renewed by March 14th, and Huffman said the country is, quote, careening toward a possible Republican shutdown of the government. Asked about the impacts of a government shutdown, Huffman said one is already happening.
Republicans are already shutting down the government. That's just the reality of what's going on, you know, day after day, week after week, thousands and thousands and thousands of employees being laid off, sometimes illegally, in ways that the courts are starting to intervene and try to stop. But in many cases, those employees can't just be brought back because in the case of USAID, the agency's been shut down. The building has been locked up in some cases. They've been shut out of their computer systems. So I consider this the beginning of a functional government shutdown by Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Republicans. Whether they will go that next step on March 14th and shut the government down, I hope not, but we will see. And I think the question is, will Democrats, you know, ride to their rescue and fix their government shutdown for them? I don't think so this time around. Not while Elon Musk is shredding our Constitution, not while Donald Trump is shredding the rule of law. We are going to need major changes and reforms and assurances in order to provide our votes. But make no mistake, if there's a government shutdown, and there very well may be, that's the Republicans and Donald Trump doing it. It's not Democrats.
Callers also said they're concerned about layoffs of federal employees and cuts to publicly funded organizations like the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB. Huffman said the budget line item for the CPB is, quote, in real trouble. It is going to be targeted. They hate public broadcasting. And he's, quote, not sure that my Democratic colleagues and I will be able to protect it the way I would like. But midterm elections will happen in 2026. And Huffman noted there's a history of power shifts in midterms. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Turning to Mendocino, as the Trump administration enforces stricter immigration policies, attorneys are offering guidance on how undocumented people can protect themselves in encounters with ICE officials. Sydney Fishman shares this report.
Since taking office, President Trump has signed 10 executive orders on immigration aimed at increasing border security, which has sparked anxiety in immigrant communities, including those living here in Mendocino County. California has around 2 million undocumented immigrants, many of whom work in agriculture, one of the largest sectors in Mendocino County. Although Mendocino County has not been designated as an official sanctuary county, it falls under the jurisdiction of California's sanctuary law, which has made the state a haven for millions of undocumented immigrants. California enacted its sanctuary law in 2017, when Governor Jerry Brown signed Senate Bill 54, the California Values Act, limiting local police and certain public entities, such as schools and courthouses, from coordinating with ICE officials on deportations. But the law does not regulate what federal officials can do within a state, because federal law overrides state law under the Constitution's Supremacy Clause. This means that ICE officials can still deport undocumented immigrants, even if state law prohibits local officers from working with federal agents. President Trump's recent orders to increase deportation efforts have sparked anxiety throughout immigrant communities, affecting mental health and well-being.
Every single day we're having conversations with people who are really stressed out, not sleeping, working on signing papers in case they get arrested and deported for someone else to take care of their children. The mental health factor is very, very real right now.
That's Kara Jobson, an immigration attorney based in Berkeley. Jobson says it's important to know your rights if you're an undocumented immigrant and you encounter ICE officials. There are resources like red cards, which outline your constitutional rights and can be shown to an ICE officer if you are being stopped without reason. These cards can be obtained from the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, where you can download, print, and carry the card with you in case you're in this situation.
So I actually know the man who had the idea for the card. It was a man named Mark Silverman, who used to work in San Francisco at an organization called the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, ILRC, which is still around. And he had the idea to have something that someone could have in their hand, because in the moment it can be confusing, it can be frightening, and to have something, you know, tangible that someone can have in their hand, they could present to an ICE officer. So that was sort of the genesis of it, and they've been around for decades. But my understanding is they're kind of flying off the printer right now because of this political situation, and so many people are ordering them. And they're in lots of different languages, English and Spanish, obviously, and then many other languages as well. And I think the importance of the card is so that someone, if they're stopped in their car by ICE or approached on the street or wherever the location is, that they know exactly what to do. They pull out this red card, they hand it to the agent, and then they remain quiet. And there have already been stories of people who were on the way to work or whatever, were stopped, presented the card, and ultimately later that day they were right there at work just fine. So the card can work very well.
Jobson emphasizes that if you are a documented immigrant and have U.S. citizenship, it's crucial that you carry both your green card and red card with you wherever you go.
Part of it is a personal and political decision on behalf, you know, on the part of that person, what stance they want to take. But if their question is, how can this be as easy and smooth, probably show the green card, because that means they have the right to live permanently in the United States. And but, you know, obviously that's sort of a personal and political choice in some ways that the person would have to make. If they're completely undocumented, they don't have anything else to show but the red card.
ICE agents cannot enter a home without a valid warrant signed by a judge. If they do have a warrant, ask them to slide it under the door or hold it up to a window to verify it. Check the details. A valid warrant must have the correct name and address. If anything is incorrect, ICE does not have the authority to enter. Remain silent. You have the right to refuse to answer questions about your immigration status. The American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California is interested in tracking ICE activity in Northern California and has a new app called Mobile Justice that can be used to report these sightings. Want to learn more or need help locally? Here are some key resources available in Mendocino County. Raise and Shine Family Resource Center in Ukiah helps immigrants with paperwork and legal support. Nuestra Alianza de Willits provides social services, food distribution, and assistance with immigration referrals. Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Santa Rosa hosts monthly workshops in Ukiah for immigration support, with their next event on March 5th at 1640 South State Street from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. UVA Vecinos en Acción, a Latino outreach organization in Ukiah, helps immigrants find jobs, housing, and healthcare resources. California Human Development, a nonprofit based in Santa Rosa, assists with visa applications and other resources. This is Sydney Fishman reporting for KMUD News under the California Local News Fellowship.
In state news, Bay Area religious leaders reaffirm support for California sanctuary for immigrants on anniversary of World War II Japanese internment order. Kennedy Coelho reports.
Religious leaders representing over 50 denominations joined to reaffirm their support for sanctuary policies. From different religions and denominations, these religious leaders from across the Bay met at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in San Francisco Wednesday morning to discuss sanctuary as a sacred tradition across many faiths, ensuring protection and solidarity within the church. The event's sponsor, Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity, works with sanctuary congregations to provide support for California's immigrant population. Jeffrey Matsuoka of the Buddhist Church of San Francisco spoke about sanctuary as it connects to the anniversary of Executive Order 9066, signed on this same day 83 years ago. Executive Order 9066 was issued by then-President Franklin D. Roosevelt, authorizing the removal of people of Japanese descent into internment camps, citing the Aliens and Sedition Act of 1798. Matsuoka said that when Japanese communities were forced to leave with only what they could carry, churches stored what they couldn't take. And after the war, churches and temples opened their doors to provide shelter and community. He called on churches to once again provide sanctuary to immigrant communities.
Sanctuary is a traditional place of religious spaces as sacred places for peace and reflection, a refuge. We invite all faith communities, including, of course, those in the Japanese American community, to honor this history that we have as a sanctuary to all immigrants.
After the news conference, religious leaders were joined by members of their congregations on a march from St. Mark's Lutheran Church to Christ United Presbyterian Church. On the march over, activists carried signs calling for the end to detention centers and to keep families together, along with chants calling for sanctuary. During the march, three supporters, a healthcare worker named Sue, a Zen Center teacher named Greg, and a volunteer with Kahila Community Synagogue named Matthew, spoke briefly, saying they felt compelled to join for moral reasons.
I wanted just to be present to show my support for sanctuary.
Our Bodhisattva vows tell us that we are all connected, that we are all part of humanity, joined together by our common Buddha nature, and we believe in justice and mercy.
There's a long history of sanctuary, whether it was legal or not legal, based on U.S. laws. But we are here as an interfaith community to affirm that we support all immigrants in these moments of crisis and terror.
At Christ United Presbyterian Church, speakers focused on the anniversary of Executive Order 9066. Family members of survivors spoke out saying they see parallels between what the Trump administration is doing with immigrants and what happened to the Japanese community during World War II. Casey Lukai, member of the Berkeley Buddhist Temple, specifically called out the Alien and Seditions Act, saying this is familiar to Japanese Americans.
Trump has repeatedly said said he would immediately round up and deport millions of immigrants by invoking the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, the very law that provided the legal basis for the incarceration of our families without warrants or formal charges. And following his inauguration, the Trump administration executed many executive orders targeting immigrants, laying the groundwork for his plans for military-style roundups, mass detention, and deportation.
Matsuoka of the Buddhist Church of San Francisco returned to tell his mother's story of life in the internment camps. He said his story is different since his mother was actually born in Peru. He said an agreement between Peru and the U.S. was struck that sent Japanese Peruvians to an internment camp in Texas by ship. He described the dehumanizing conditions his mother's family faced when she was just 14 with her 22-month-old brother.
The trip took 3 weeks, during which no one was allowed to bathe or go above deck. When they finally arrived at port, everyone was forced to surrender their passports and their official documents. They were led by armed guards to a warehouse-like building. My grandmother was fearful that this would be the end of our family. When they entered the building, they were told to strip naked and were sprayed with DDT as a way to cleanse themselves.
February 19th is Day of Remembrance for those affected by Executive Order 9066. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Quayle.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Sydney Fishman, Kennedy Quayle, and David Hummel. KMUD News is online. You can find us at KMUD.org, Castos, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.